We're on page 439. And we stopped at line 74, if you have the line numbers. So we're in Book 6, Canto 2, which begins the first section of this canto is a series of questions and complaints from Savitri's mother. How can the universe be so unfair? And what a terrible challenge human beings have to face. And why has all this got to happen to her beautiful daughter? Mm-hmm. So we're near the top of page 439. And Savitri's mother is at this point listing all the things that can go wrong with the body. You will read, Murakam?
So, line number 5.
Yes.
In the malignant hollows of the world, in its subconscious cavern passages, ambushed, they lie waiting their hours to leap, surrounding with danger and siege city of life. Admitted into the citadel of man's days, the mind is forced and man are suddenly killed. Ourselves within has lethal forces nursed. We make of our own enemies our guests. Out of their holes, like bees, they creep, and now the chords of the divine musician slay. Still frayed and thin, the music dies away, or crashing snaps with the last tragic note. All that we are is like a fort beset. All that we strive to be alters like a dream in the grey sleep of matter's ignorance.
Thank you. So this is referring to this grisly company of maladies, all the things that can go wrong with our body. Don, what would you say about this word grisly?
Well, it's a grizzly bear.
No, that's not the grizzly bear. That's a different spelling. It's a different word.
That is a reference, is all I meant to say there. That it means very covered with hair, which is sharp and coarse and unpleasant to touch, and somewhat long, and so on there. So many of us have long hair. We haven't gone to the barber for a long time. Wake up in the morning with bristly hair. This is the best time of all.
Something that's grisly delights in gnawing at you, eating you up and torturing you. It takes pleasure in destroying.
Maybe that's what that is, what the bear is supposed to be, rather than the hair, mine and maybe mine's skin.
Well, it's connected with the word grey. I mean, both of them, both the spellings. Anyway, what does it say there?
Horrifying, ghastly.
Ghastly, yes.
That's not fair to the grizzly bear.
No, no, that's grizzly bears are not called like that. They might be called that because in their fur they have on the top a different colour. That's the way about the hair also. When it's starting to turn grey, you can say it's grizzled. That the grey is starting to come.
Coarse also, the hair.
Maybe coarse. But that's spelt with a double Z, like the grizzly bear, no?
And I thought it's like this horrible presence, you know? When you look up and there's this bear in front of you, like that. That's what I think is the connotation, because
here
the sickness is like that. Suddenly you're told you have cancer, like this, you know.
Yeah.
There is no less,
I'm
sorry.
Or
I think it's much more connected maybe to French, green.
The idea of grey is there, yes. Mm. Yeah. Anyway, these people come into our bodily house and they bring death. And they make us suffer in life. And then where we started today, these grisly company of maladies, these purveyors of death and torturers of life, are waiting in ambush in our subconscious. We think that maladies come to us in the form of germs from outside, but in fact they come to us from inside. From our subconscious. Mm. So they wait there for the moment of weakness when they can leap on us. And then it is as if they are besieging the city of our life. That's what armies do. It's happening now in Iraq and Syria. They surround a city, they cut off the supply lines. They try to cut off the life of the city. No? So that's what these maladies do. They come up from our subconscious and they cut off our lines of supply of energy and life. No? And if they get admitted into the citadel, the city, the besieged city, will have a central strong place, the citadel. Usually it's on a hill. It's very well fortified and defended. But perhaps there's a traitor inside who opens a door and they can creep in. And if they can do that, they mine his force. Again, this is an expression from warfare. Of course, it's connected with undermine. They would try to dig under the walls and weaken the defenses. But nowadays also, they will put a mine, they will put some explosive there to blow it all up.
You said about greatness is there in the last line, and the great heap of matter ignorance.
Yes. So we are nursing these lethal forces, these deadly forces within us. We allow them to enter us as guests. There they are in the subconscious, and they creep out like rats out of their holes. And they creep.
Nursing means we feed them.
Sorry?
Nursing means we feed them somehow.
Where does it?
We care for them if they're ill, if they're not well.
Where have we got nursed?
Horses, we nurse ourselves within
Yes, we feed them and look after them and give them sustenance. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yes.
I'm greedy like a
tiger. So they gnaw. It says at the cords of the divine musician's lyre. Here I wonder if there's a mistake. Every time I read this line, I think the lyre doesn't have chords with an H. A chord with an H is when you play several notes at the same time. But the lyre has chords. C-O-R-D-S.
If you touch the right number of
Yeah, of course you can.
You can get C-H-R.
But the rat gnaws at the chords. And then you can't play the chords. So, of course, this is a part of the poem which was probably dictated. I could ask somebody to check. It's not the only place where I have this doubt. Of course, it could be that Sri Aurobindo wanted to give us this idea of two things at the same time, the chords and the chords on the lyre.
We can always pass those along to Richard.
Yes, so Richard, I would ask about it. Yeah. Because it's the chords that get frayed, but here he says it's the music. The music gets frayed and thin and dies away, or it snaps. Like a last tragic note. So that's what happens to us. And everything that we are is like a fort which is being besieged, beset.
Yes, yeah. If you see here, it says the chord of the divine musician's lyre still frayed and thin, so big, but now the chords.
Yes, that seems, but it's the music that gets frayed and thin. And the music dies away. So I think Sri Aurobindo is putting together the two ideas there.
I think it's possible that in the spirit of synthesis, even if you made the change, both would be true.
Yes. Yeah. So you would have both ideas in your mind at the center.
Which is right.
But yes. Right. It's always better to decide that both are right. It's one of these forms of ambiguity which are allowed in poetry, that the poet can play with, that a word or an expression doesn't have only one meaning. It suggests one or more other meanings. There was a great critic in the 30s who wrote a book called Seven Types of Ambiguity, which he detected in English poetry.
Ambiguity?
No, different ways in which poets bring ambiguity into their text. So this would be one of them, to use this spelling chords in a context where we would be expecting chords.
Ambiguity means exactly what? Two
it means meanings? Have more than one meaning. Strictly it means two meanings, but...
And how it's used isn't clear, so it's ambiguous.
Something that is ambiguous. You're not sure what it means because it could have different meanings.
Yes. Should I read what it says here for ambiguous? Questionable, not clear in distinction. The most common usage applies to words or other modes of communication where more than one interpretation, as in a double meaning, is possible, hence equivocal. So that'd be very interesting if that applies to all the changes that have been made in Tavi. That would solve the quarrel. There's a double meaning.
No, some changes have been made, and the editors are very frank about it, that they can't always 100% guarantee that they've been trying to follow Sri Aurobindo's intention, but sometimes his intention is not clear, and so... Yeah. We are not joining this quarrel.
Anybody who's tried to read his handwriting, I worked briefly at the archives once. I tried to read. I thought, how do they read it?
Yeah.
Very difficult.
So that there she's been speaking about the body and the way things can go wrong, no? It says she even said that for every part of the body, it's as if something has been planned. It's apt, inevitable heritage of mortal danger and peculiar pain. Every part of the body has its own way that it can go wrong. So now she's going to speak about mind. So.
Self-language by the world is harmony and unlovableness of human things. Treasures and of shifting fruitlessly sold in the bazaar or in blind with tea. The gift of projects running from time's cause. Lost or enslaved in an uncaring world. Life is a marvel wisdom and fast gone alive, a sitter in the dark and obscure place, an ill-armed warrior facing dreadful odds, an imperfect worker driven about doing tasks, an ignorant judge of problems that no one's made. His heavenward flight which calls and Kiev's gates and its glorious outbursts of Peter out in my
opinion. Peter out.
Who is speaking?
This is the mother of Savitri.
This is the mother.
It seems as if she's asking Narada, is this poor, miserable human life to be continued, and therefore...
Who is responsible? Why is it like this? That's what she's asking. So this is quite a pessimistic view of life. She's feeling let down and very, very unhappy, and this is how she's seeing the world. But we can sympathize with this way of seeing the world. There's a certain truth in it, that we're given this gift of a life all fresh and new, full of possibility, and it seems often that we are unable to make full use of it. The idea of petering out, it's water perhaps, precious water, but there's not enough of it, and it becomes a trickle, and then it vanishes altogether in the mud. Here.
So everything is erected on a basis of unconscious. So So in the end, everything goes back to intention. So as long as the basis is the same, you can always be the same way.
Yes. And yet, if it were only unconscious, the thing is that there's this attempt and this longing for something else, no? So there are heavenward flights, great efforts people make. A lot of literature is about this, no? About the pathos of the efforts and the attempts that people make, and then how everything becomes either tragic or just ordinary again. So,
in the first canto of Savitri, that inconscience gets the surprise package from above.